This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us at noon on Thursdays, and we appreciate same. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Great to be back. A lot going on right now.
Absolutely. Let's talk about clearances of homicides and prosecutions.
Right. So, you know, we've experienced a slight uptick in violent crime in the city of New Orleans over the past 2 weeks. But there's a lot of good news about the successful efforts of the police department and prosecutors to hold dangerous and repeat offenders accountable. So an arrest without a conviction is a failed outcome. And as I mentioned, we've seen a slight uptick in violent crime. And, you know, when you take a look at what happened in January and February with respect to homicides, in January of 24, we had 18 homicides. In January of 25, we had 21. Of which 14 were the New Year's Day terrorist attack. So in February of 24, we had 12 homicides, and in 25, we only had two. In the month of March in 24, we had 11 for the entire month, and so far this month, we've had seven, which is a little uptick over what we experienced in February. But having said all of that, you know, as I pointed out, when we've spoken about this, is the police department announced on Tuesday that they had solved 22 of the 28 murders recorded at that point in time so far this year. And that included 7 solved by arrest and 15 solved by exception with respect to the New Year's Day massacre. So, you know, that was, I think, you know, some of the good news. So the police department, and we've talked about this, is quickly identifying who the perpetrators are, and they've been successful in arresting those individuals. But as I pointed out, those arrests are only the beginning of the process. They've taken those offenders, the violent and repeat offenders, off the streets, but to keep them off the streets, the police arrest on a probable cause standard. A prosecutor has to determine if there is sufficient evidence to obtain a conviction, which is the proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard. So if the investigation stops at probable cause, it means that the offender that was arrested by the police department, once the district attorney's office determines that there is insufficient evidence to obtain a conviction, they have to refuse or decline that prosecution. And that means that the offender gets released to the community, back out into the community. So what's been happening over the past 2 years is that the police are quickly identifying who the perpetrators are. They're making the arrests. And what has been happening, too, and we haven't really spoken sufficiently about it, I believe, is what happens on the backside of those arrests. And that, you know, starts with the district attorney's office. So what we're seeing is that the district attorney's office is stepping up to the plate. You know, we documented, for instance, that the district attorney's office is prioritizing homicide cases. And last year, they took 42 homicide cases to trial and achieved an 86% conviction rate. So the implications of those convictions basically reconfirm the point that I just made. So if those individuals that were arrested by the police department, if the evidence didn't justify the district attorney's office seeking indictments and going to trial, then those offenders would have been back out on the streets. And we know that when crime was escalating, the solve rates were down, the conviction rates were down. And now we're seeing the solve rates go up, and we're seeing the conviction rates go up, and that is, you know, responsible for fueling the decreases in violent crime that we've been experiencing over the past 2 years. But it's not, you know, just the singular efforts of one entity. It's the entire criminal justice system. And today I wanted to talk a little bit about the role of the DA's office and how critically important it is for the DA's office to be able to cooperate, coordinate, and communicate effectively with the New Orleans Police Department to enhance the police department and support the police department's efforts to reduce violent crime by holding violent offenders accountable. And that couldn't be done without the district attorney's office as well being involved in that.
No
so
doubt.
There's go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, the mantra at JPSO has always been our arrests are only as good as a successful prosecution.
Right. And successful prosecutions are based on great investigations. And the fact that we're seeing, you know, the district attorney's office accept and prosecute and convict these cases is a testament to the good work that's being done by the investigative arm, and that's the NOPD.
Sure, absolutely.
So there's a couple of cases, you know, that we've spoken about previously, you know, one of which was the mass shooting in the French Quarter last year in late November, in which Nicholas Mariano, his brother Daniel, and a third defendant, Daryl Adams, were captured on camera emerging from their car on Iberville Street and opening fire on an individual. That incident resulted in one person being murdered and three other people being wounded. And we've kind of spoken, you know, how is the police department solving these crimes? And particularly in the French Quarter, you're seeing more and more technology. So that mass shooting was solved as quickly as it was because of two pieces of technology. One is the Project NOLA crime cameras. So we know that Mariano and his accomplices jumped out of a vehicle because the entire incident was captured on Project NOLA crime cameras. And that helped the police department identify Mariano and his accomplices. And the fact that that Mariano, after his identity was discovered, law enforcement quickly determined that he was free on bail for another crime and was wearing an ankle monitor. So that ankle monitor that he was wearing helped the police quickly locate him and arrest him for that offense. So he was taken off the streets within several hours of the shooting, the homicide. So that, the DA's office, you know, recently indicted all three men, and they're, you know, there's one count of second-degree murder against him, one count of obstruction of justice, and three counts of attempted second-degree murder. So that is, you know, a testament to the good work of the police department, tying together some of the technology that they're are helping the police department serve as a force multiplier and quickly identify and apprehending. And that's the type of evidence that prosecutors need to obtain convictions. And you see how all of this works seamlessly together and ties together neatly. Another case that recently went to indictment was the case of Jaleel Williams. He's a 28-year-old. And he was accused of killing a Cox Communications employee doing a failed armed robbery attempt back in December of 24. Within 2 days, the police had identified Jaleel Williams as the suspect and arrested him for the murder. You know, witnesses saw him fleeing the murder scene on a scooter. The police determined where the scooter was purchased from. They went to the scooter store and saw a video of him wearing the same clothing that was worn at the scene of the murder, which helped the police quickly identify him. So that's the type of work that's being done. That's the type of evidence that helps police, helps district attorney's office obtain indictments and ultimately convictions, because you have the requirement of proving someone's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. That's another case that just went to indictment in the past week or 10 days. Another case involves the indictment of Eric Garrison, 31-year-old. And he was accused of gunning down his 32-year-old victim, who was standing on the neutral ground on St. Rocks Avenue in August of last year. Police identified him as the suspect within a few weeks, but he was once they identified him, the U.S. Marshals arrested him in Dallas, Texas, the day after he was identified. So he was indicted for second-degree murder, obstruction, and impeding and injuring witnesses. So that, again, another example of how the police and DA's office and the type of work that's being done by both of those agencies. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about the case involving Michael Brooks, who was indicted for first-degree rape and a count of armed robbery. So Brooks is accused of forcing his way into a Central City home and raping a woman in August of 24. He was almost immediately identified as the perpetrator, but there was a warrant put out for him and he was being sought. The United States Marshals Service tracked him down and arrested him in November of last year. The district attorney's office reviewed all of the evidence that had been amassed by the police department, and they indicted him on first-degree rape and an account of armed robbery. So, you know, those cases all document, you know, the hard work, the good work that's being performed by the NOPD, and that is, you know, a known fact because we've talked about it so frequently on your show, but I think we've overlooked the important role that the district attorney's office plays in supporting the work that's done by the NOPD, and I thought it would be beneficial to bring that up today and talk a little bit more about that.
Absolutely, because this is good news, right? This is the way the system is supposed to work. And when you talk about 86% conviction rate, that's a great number. You know, and cases change. They're very dynamic. You know, a lot of times there's surprises. Anytime you're in the 80s, you're doing really, really well. And, you know, the number of cases that are being brought, as you well know, we've talked about throughput. Without throughput, you're stuck on stock, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, all right, so, let's get to a break. Go ahead. Let's get to a break here, and we'll pick it up here, if you don't mind.
Okay.
We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will be right back. Got a lot more interesting stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about an ordinance as well that Councilmember Oliver Thomas is talking about floating, which I think is problematic. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. I didn't mean to cut you off earlier, Rafi. You were going to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to point out, you know, that we talked about the traditional way that prosecutors, you know, are supporting the work of the police department, but the DA's office is also doing some non-traditional things. And I know you've spoken about it, had other guests talking about it, but I'd just like to bring it to the audience's attention again, their efforts with respect to the No Dice initiative. So historically, prosecutors are known for what, you know, what they do in the courtroom. But what the DA's office is doing behind the scenes in meeting rooms, coordinating their efforts with the police department, city leaders, community leaders, and city agencies, is also responsible for the reductions in crime. And really, the No Dice initiative is using data to identify high crime spots, hot spots in the city, and then determining in those hot spots if there are any businesses or quality of life or infrastructure problems that are contributing to those crime hot spots. So by looking at data and identifying those hot spots and then determining if there is a causation between the high crime and some of the infrastructure or businesses in that area, it's allowed the police department and the city to identify those spots, address those spots, and as those spots see the reductions in crime, we're seeing that crime is going down citywide. So one of the areas that the No Dice initiative identified through crime mapping was there was a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week tire shop and a market out in New Orleans East that were at the epicenter of crimes of violence and drug trafficking there. Once they identified those two locations, they were able to use existing civil laws to seize the property, eliminate those hot spots, and restore safety to the community. So that tire shop and that market were in the 7th District. In 2023 to 2024, violent crime reduced after the closing of that 24-hour tire shop and that market by 47% in 2024 versus 2023. Another area in the 1st District identified some hot spots there. And what we experienced comparing 23's violent crime rate to 2024's violent crime rate was a 55% decrease in violent crime in the first district. So that is making a difference, and it's a non-traditional approach, but I commend the district attorney's office for what they're doing in that area, because it absolutely supports and is absolutely one of the causes that we're experiencing some of the decreases in crime.
Excuse me, no doubt. In fact, I had some folks on from the DA's office talking about No Dice, and these stats are very, very impressive. And I really do like the approach and the collaboration and the collaborative effort that he's brought about in each one of these areas. Anytime you're able to affect double-digit reductions in a very short period of time, things are working very positively. Let us switch or pivot to another issue. An ordinance proposed by Councilmember Oliver Thomas was supposed to be on the agenda today. It's been delayed until April the 10th. And they desire this to be on the ballot the same time as the primary election for the city race in October, which I think is interesting. I don't believe in coincidences. Talk to us about what he is proposing.
Okay, so what Councilman Thomas is proposing is amending the Home Rule Charter for the City of New Orleans, more particularly the Bill of Rights provisions within the Home Rule Charter. And the Home Rule Charter, Article 2, Section 6, lists nine areas in which the city needs to take every effort to prevent any discrimination against anyone on the basis of race, color, religion, or national origin. But they're adding a 10th category that they're attempting to ban, or at least Oliver is, and that is conviction histories. So Oliver, if this legislation passes, basically means that the prior criminal conviction could not be used as the basis for not hiring somebody that's applying for a position with the city. So that language, to me, kind of flies in the face of Section 9 of the Bill of Rights under the Home Rule Charter. And Section 9 of the Bill of Rights of the City's Home Rule Charter says the people have a right to a government of the highest ethical standards, free from corruption, untainted by graft, and conducted in accordance with sound fiscal planning and administration. So basically, you could be convicted of committing a crime of corruption or graft, and be hired by the city. In fact, it would be in violation of the city charter to exclude somebody based on a conviction. And I don't think that is a prudent thing to do for the reasons I'm about to talk about. One, Louisiana and the city of New Orleans have a ban the box provision that is already law, both in the city of New Orleans and in the state of Louisiana. So when someone is applying for a position, you cannot put on the application anymore a question about, do you have any prior convictions? Now, the fact that is not on the box, on the application, doesn't mean that a background check cannot be conducted. And in fact, all businesses usually do some form of background checks of anybody and everybody that's hired. And there are certain things that could be and should be disqualifiers for employment. But in the city of New Orleans, if this ordinance passes, or if this charter amendment passes, it may have some serious repercussions to public safety that I don't know if this has been thought through by everybody. So right now, if somebody is, again, on the box that you're attempting to fill out an application, you don't have to disclose you've ever been arrested or convicted, But as the interview process and the application process progresses, you know, there's going to be a background check conducted. And if they determine that there is a felony conviction under the ban the box legislation that exists right now, that employers can consider the nature of the offense, the time elapsed since the conviction, and the nature of the job that is being sought. So that's, you know, some checks and balances under the legislation that has been approved both in the city of New Orleans and in the state of Louisiana. But if the amendment to the Bill of Rights is included, I think it raises some real questions about whether agencies could disqualify someone from employment based on a prior conviction. And I think a prior conviction is extremely important depending on the type of job that someone is applying for, how long ago the conviction was, is another factor. So, for example, if this passed, if the applicant was fired from his previous job for stealing and or dishonesty, but was not prosecuted or convicted, the city could review the person's prior history, work history, and disqualify them from hiring based on Section 9 of the Bill of Rights in the city. But if, you know, that same case resulted in a conviction, then that could not be factored into the hiring decision. So that really makes no sense. In other words, the conviction is the triggering offense. And really, in reality, what the employer is attempting to do is to assess someone's suitability. The best way to predict the future is to look at someone's past. So you could have somebody that's been on probation, is on probation applying for a job, is on parole applying for a job. If you are an elective office, you're seeking elective office, you have to wait 5 years under Louisiana law before you can qualify to run for a political race. If you are convicted of a crime while you are a public official, that immediately disqualifies you from being a public official. You're removed from office. So prior criminal histories are important for an employer to consider. And if this bill passes, I could see scenarios where applicants are seeking employment with NORD and they want to interact with children. And if that prior conviction is for sex offenses against children, That would be a problem. If this bill passes, if this ordinance passes, you know, could police department no longer take into consideration felony convictions before hiring a police officer? Because an officer with a conviction has no credibility in a court of law. So those are some of the consequences, not to mention that anyone that applies for a job that doesn't get that job could allege that they were discriminated against, not on the basis of merit, because the city took into consideration his prior felony conviction. And that in itself is going to result in additional cost in litigation that the city of New Orleans will have to engage in and potentially cost the taxpayers more money with respect to civil litigation that may emerge from creating this new category in the city's whole home rule chart.
The interesting thing here is that I would love to see what evidence we're going to bring forward that this is actually necessary, right? And when you talk about all of the situations and possible outcomes of this relative to jobs or recent, you know, how recent is the criminal activity, what were you actually convicted of or arrested for, all of these issues are of the utmost importance. This is a political stunt. That's all this is. This is an attempt to get this on the ballot in October to help facilitate his run for mayor. I mean, if everybody's got to be able to see through this, right? I mean, and in fact, it's really disappointing because we should have that ballot clear of all these other issues, and it ought to be about the mayor's race and the other races that the city is going to end up, the people that live in the city of New Orleans are going to end up voting on, as opposed to these stunts. There are timelines to get things on a ballot. I'm sure that's why this is coming up now, because things have to be resolved at some point, either by the end of June or the second week of July. I think it's by the end of June. And that's why all of this is coming up. It's just a political stunt, in my view.
Well, I share your view in this, and that's disappointing. But I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this doesn't get through the council process. Because I think that, and if it does get through the council process, I would like to think that the public now is aware of, or at least it's on their radar screen, and I'm sure if it does make it through the council and onto the ballot, that the public sees through it and makes, you know, the appropriate decision with respect to this. I believe it would be a setback and result in hiring of unqualified employees that pose a safety risk to the people of the city of New Orleans and would subject the city and taxpayers to potential unnecessary and costly litigation.
And that's the only reason this is brought up now. And I'm really disappointed because I asked him about, you know, whether or not, because we had two council members that are running for mayor, we've got this lame duck mayor, and the council would not engage in this type of activity. And here we are. It's not even a week after the interview. He's starting to float this piece of garbage. I mean, it's just, you know, let the games begin. I mean, I hope the folk, you know, the constituents of the city see right through this, and they see it for what it is. I mean, what did he wake up the other day with a revelation that this is absolutely necessary at this point in time? I don't think so.
I mean,
you know, why wasn't this proposed before? We just had some stuff that we voted on. Actually, it could have been on the ballot when? Like this Saturday, right?
Right.
But it wasn't.
Well, keep in mind, right? You know, the ban the box legislation that the city passed was 2018. And
yeah.
I'm sure that this was considered then. And then the state of Louisiana, when they enacted ban the box legislation, that was 2021. So, you know, this was looked into by the city in 2018, and they believe that the viable solution was the ban the box legislation, which, you know, said that you couldn't require anyone to put that on their application, and that application, that admission on that application might immediately exclude someone from consideration. So they thought yeah. that applicants should have the ability to get through the application process. But, you know, the ban the box legislation allows for and respects the fact that employers have to do background checks, and it states on the state level that employers may consider the nature of the offense, the time elapsed since the conviction, and the nature of the job sought. And that's why there are some exclusions where you don't want individuals that are going to be dealing with children get hired when they have pedophilia in their background. That's why law enforcement has to conduct criminal history checks to determine if applicants for law enforcement positions have prior felony convictions, because a prior felony conviction raises issues with the credibility of the officer.
Sure.
And so those are legitimate and well-recognized exceptions that the law provides, but I believe that this amendment to the city charter would jeopardize law enforcement and the city's ability to disqualify unqualified applicants for sensitive positions.
old-time smoke and mirrors politics at its best. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Raphael, it's recently been reported Inspector Randy Farrell has pled no contest to charges in a Jefferson Parish case. How does this impact the federal investigation into the mayor and Randy Farrell?
Right. So we've previously spoken about the fact that Randy Farrell is under federal indictment, and his case is ongoing right now. But when he was indicted last year, he was indicted on charges that he conducted electrical inspections on work that was performed by unlicensed electricians that hired him to conduct those inspections. So the government indicted him on a number of counts of wire fraud. And what was happening is someone working in the city, one of the supervisors in the city office of inspections and permits, was on to what Randy Farrell was doing and was investigating him. And what the government indicted him for, in addition to the wire fraud that he falsely certified that the inspections, the electrical work was done and performed by licensed electricians when they were not, they weren't licensed in the city. That inspector began to question Farrell, and because of the size and scope of his business, the government was able to amass sufficient evidence to indict him on bribing public official one, which is believed to be Mayor Cantrell, and getting her to fire that inspections supervisor that was investigating Randy Farrell and documenting his misconduct. So what happened in Jefferson Parish was the Louisiana Licensing Board for Contractors had brought him up on administrative charges. They don't have the right or authority to prosecute him for a crime. But under the state guidelines for being a licensed electrician, they had brought him up on administrative charges, keeping in mind that Farrell was convicted and pled guilty to a fraud case in 2021, tax fraud. And as a convicted felon, you're not only entitled to maintain your license, but he maintained his license since that conviction. The licensing board brought him up on additional charges, in many respects, outlining the same facts that were included in the federal indictment. And recently, he pled no contest to those charges and agreed to civil penalties and relinquished the ownership of his company. The problem is that he relinquished the ownership of his company to his son. So that company is still existing. It's not in his name, it's in his son's name. But again, we're going to have to wait to see what the outcome is of the federal corruption case, as I pointed out, where not only is he accused of wire fraud with respect to falsifying records about legitimate inspections that were not performed, but also by bribing public official one, which is allegedly the mayor of the city of New Orleans.
This, we've heard a number of times about the statute of limitations on a number of these allegations that have been made. Most of the ones that I've heard about have passed. Is there an update to that federal case at all?
Well, I have not heard anything, about whether the investigation is going to result in additional indictments. But what I can say is this. I've been doing this for, several decades now. I've never seen the federal government, A, miss a prescriptive date, and B, I've never seen the federal government indict someone for bribing a public official and not indict the public official as well. So if they're going to charge Randy Farrell with bribing a public official, That, to me, indicates that the government is well aware of any prescriptive dates that are involved in it, and that their intention is that they're going to indict that public official. But that has not happened yet, and it remains to be seen if it will happen. But I don't see how they would be able to proceed against Randy Farrell with respect to his bribery charges if they don't in charge the public official that accepted the bribes that he's allegedly made to that public official.
All righty. Well, we thank you for the update and appreciate your time, your insight, and have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, sir. That's Raphael Goinecci, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. We're back. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
If species is to eat them. Now, you know, we've heard talk about eating nutria. Not a fan of the thought of that. But what about eating iguana? You know, it's a big problem in Florida. You know, we even have a description of what iguana tastes like. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that in the 3 o'clock hour.
Scoot's up next. Stay tuned, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Thursday evening. See you in the morning.